Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are fresh off of another UFC event. UFC Vegas 105 went down this past weekend. I was able to catch the fights, and I do have my thoughts on every single one of them, all 12 of these fights. We had some cancellations last minute, unfortunately, some people pulling out. But nonetheless, it happened, you know. Was there anything notable? I don't really know what to say on that behalf, but we'll be giving our thoughts on every single fight as well. We'll be looking at the NHL as we had talked about the NBA and their current standings. We'll be discussing the NHL and its current standings as we get into the final 3 to 5 games for every single team. You know, it's winding down to the end. Also, we're going to be discussing the current state of WrestleMania 41. That is right. Big WWE fan here. Actually going to Monday Night Raw tonight, if you listen to this on Monday, April 7th. But yes, April 7th, I will be at Monday Night Raw. So if you see me, come say hello. But, I mean, we're going to be discussing the current matches they have announced, what matches they should maybe announce, and just the current state of where it's at right now. But coming off of a fun weekend, was able to go out with some of my buddies, was able to see Lexi, was able to watch all the March Madness games. We'll be discussing those after the championship. We'll be discussing that on episode 180. So we got a lot of fun stuff to come ahead and a lot of fun stuff that's happened in the life of Zachary Ruger. But without a doubt, let's dive into it. Enough about me. Let's discuss the NHL, because usually we discuss new UFC news, but there really hasn't been any new UFC news. Although there is rumors of Ito Piera and Charles Oliveira, none of that has been confirmed. But as for now, what we do know is confirmed is the current NHL standing. So as we get into the wild card for the Eastern Conference, and even if we just discuss the Eastern Conference in general, Capitals are the number one team. 107 points. They're the top dogs. And if you didn't know, Alexander Ovechkin broke Wayne Gretzky's record for most goals scored in a career at 895. And isn't it insane? Before it's all said and done, he's going to get over 900. Just crazy to think about. Crazy enough, they did drop that game to the Islanders, which I think is just absolutely hilarious, is that they ended up losing that game, if I'm not mistaken, if this doesn't fail me. Where even are the Islanders? Yeah, Islanders, 2-game win streak. So Capitals somehow lost that game, oddly, but they are still the top team, a plus 66 point differential, 49-19-9. They are the top team in the Eastern Conference. At number two, the Toronto Maple Leafs, they have 98 points, 47-25-4 record. They're on a 4-game win streak, 8-1-1 as well in their last 10. They've been playing great. It sets them up as the top team for the Atlantic Division in the playoffs, and I'm basically, if we're going off of seeding, they're the number two seed. In the number three spot is going to be the Carolina Hurricanes at 96 points. Them, the Maple Leafs, probably going to be fighting for that number one spot. They're on a 2-game losing streak, however, so if they're going to want to get that number two spot, they best put it all together. At number four, the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are currently second in the Atlantic Division. 94 points, not too bad. They did lose an overtime game earlier today, so hopefully they can rally from that and get back in the win category. I mean, hey, Tampa Bay, plus 70 point differential is the best, not just in the Eastern Conference, but second in the whole league. Wow, I was going to say, I thought they were the best, but there's actually a better one in the Western Conference. Florida Panthers at five, round out the actual teams that have clinched a playoff spot. They're on a 3-game losing streak. Yikes, but they will be making the playoffs as they round out the Atlantic Division, as all spots are clinched there. There is still one spot left, and that is in the Metropolitan Division with the New Jersey Devils, who are currently in the playoffs with 89 points. However, as we look at the entire state of the division, the Senators actually have more points than them. Canadians are only 4 points behind them. It's really shaping up. For the teams that are trying to get into the wild card, I mean, Rangers are at 79. Detroit Red Wings are at 79. I'm thinking Senators at 90 points. They're on a 3-game win streak. They're the number one team in the wild card. And at number two, on a 5-game win streak at 85, is the Montreal Canadiens. So the Canadiens, they have, if I do some quick math here, 5 games left. The odds of them losing 4 of those and the Rangers winning 4 goals. So if the Rangers have to go 4-1 and the Canadiens have to go 1-4, that's possible. But at the same time, I just don't really see it happening. So I'm going to say your playoffs are just about set for the Eastern Conference. I'm seeing a Canadiens matchup with the Maple. Canadiens Capitals. Senators take on the Maple Leafs, I want to say. Then you get a little matchup between, who would it be, Hurricanes and Panthers? And then maybe you get Lightnings, Devils? I don't know. The NHL playoffs are always weird how they seed their teams. It's not as set as the NBA, but I don't know. Right now, Capitals are the favorite, but I'm thinking the Maple Leafs and Lightning might be sneaky teams come playoff time. Bottom of the barrel, I mean, everyone in the East is pretty good. They all have at least 70 points. The same cannot be said for the Western Conference, so Bruins, Flyers, both had 71 points. They're officially eliminated. Somehow the Penguins, Sabres, both with 74. They're not fully eliminated. Sabres, 4-game win streak. Good for them. Columbus Blue Jackets at 77. Islanders at 78. There's still some hope, but then you kind of get into that Red Wings, Rangers area. They're going to need some miracles to really get together. But if it's up to me, I mean, I'm riding with the Capitals. Ovechkin breaking the goal record. I watched the game with two of my buddies where he beat the record, and tied the record, I should better say, and that was super exciting. So good for him. He's currently celebrating accordingly right now, I can believe. Incredible for him. And Wayne Gretzky was in attendance. Lovely to see. Getting into the Western Conference, the one I actually care about. This is where your heavy hitters are. The Winnipeg Jets, 108 points, 52-21-4. They're the top team in the NHL. 81-point differential. Dallas Stars at number two, 105 points, 50-22-5, plus 66-point differential. Two units. There's your number one, number two seed. Your number three seed, Vegas Golden Knights, 46-22-8. They're at 100 points. Their dominance is ever, plus 51-point differential. Here's where we get into your little 5-6 seed, Avalanche, 98 points. They've clinched a spot in the Central Division, all right? They're in the playoffs for sure. Also for sure, in the Pacific Division, Los Angeles Kings, 97 points, 44-23-9 record. They're on a 4-game win streak. 8-2 over the last 10, they've been playing pretty good puck. You know, very good at home. They've only lost 8 times at home, 4 of those coming in overtime. And as for away, they have dropped an outstanding 24 games on the road, 19 of those in regulation. So Kings really could use a game at home. They would need to get that number 4 seed. I don't know if that's going to be possible. I don't know if you could get past the Avalanche, but they're on a win streak. It's not impossible. Currently rounding us out at our number 6 seed, if I'm doing this correctly, Edmonton Oilers, 93 points. It's not set in stone, though, as that Pacific Division, anyone can sneak in. Really, anyone can sneak in that Pacific Division. As I kind of take a quick glance over it, they're at 93 points. Flames are at 85, so it's just about all locked up. As I've now taken a second glance, it's all about locked up. The real interesting stuff comes in the wild card. Blues, 12-game win streak. 93 points. Yeah, they're making the playoffs. They are just not stopping. 43-28-7. There was at one point, they were 31-21-7, and their season seemed over. And now look at them. They're on the run of a lifetime. Last time they went on a run like this, they won the Stanley Cup. Crazy enough. The Minnesota Wild, okay, got a big win today in overtime. Thankfully, 42-29-7. They're at 91 points. With the season winding to an end, you know, they have only 4 games remaining. It's going to be pivotal that they can round it out. So Flames, they have 85 points. They are going to need to do something miraculous in their final, I think it is 6 games, I want to say. 6 games or something like that to really make a run, but it's not impossible. It's not impossible. So Flames, they will look to pass the Wild. I don't see it happening. When we talk about eliminated teams in the East, eliminated teams in the West, San Jose Sharks, 20-46-10, minus 94-point differential, only 50 points on the year. In the same boat, Blackhawks, 22-45-10, minus 69-point differential. They've only won 7 games on the road, for goodness sakes, and only have 54 points. Predators with 62, they're on a 6-game losing streak. Terrible season for them. Kraken, Ducks in the 70 range, and then you got the Utah Hockey Club and Canucks, who are just at 82-83. And despite getting into that 80-point differential, it's just not going to cut it for the playoffs, so if I'm looking at this correctly, Jets versus Wild is going to be round one matchup for us. Blues taking on, I don't really know how they seed, but would it be Blues versus Stars then? If I'm to understand this correctly, then you have Golden Knights taking on either the, I want to say Kings or Avalanche, and then Oilers take on the other team besides that. I don't know how the seeding actually works. I actually should probably learn from my buddies how this seeding works. I think that would be good, and as I continue to progress my hockey knowledge. But on the same boat of NHL, we also have college. You know, you're getting a Denver, Western Michigan. I think either Maine or Massachusetts is in the Final Four. It's pretty exciting times. Boston College, I think, is in, or maybe it's University of Boston, University of Massachusetts. I don't know. hockey is on fire right now. Maybe it's just because I'm surrounded by people who watch hockey, but I think it's been pretty entertaining. And as we progress into the end of the season, we will be doing a playoffs preview show with a bunch of my buddies. I'm going to get a little round table going. It's going to be fantastic. But let's segue from the ice into the ring. That is right, ladies and gentlemen. As we all know on this channel, big WWE guy. I rock with a little WWE. It's fun. It's interesting. I enjoy watching it. And as we all know, the Super Bowl of WWE is coming up. That's right. None other than WrestleMania, the 41st WrestleMania of all time. And we're going to be discussing a bit more on next week's episodes. We're going to be doing some fun stuff, ranking. We might even have my buddy Ryan come on and join us. Ryan Udd, he hasn't been on before. And it's going to be a fun time. This year, WrestleMania coming to you from Las Vegas. So you already know they're going to pull out all the stops. The official main event of WrestleMania, Cody Rhodes versus John Cena. It's going to be electric. That's the night two main event. The night one main event, you get CM Punk versus Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins in a triple threat match, which is just so, so intense. I'm excited to see CM Punk and Seth Rollins, especially with Paul Heyman, at this Monday Night Raw that I will be going to. Now, this is taking place over Easter weekend, which I'm wondering if they were thinking that all families will be together, so it's a great opportunity to watch it with their families. I was a bit perplexed at them holding this over Easter weekend, but nonetheless, I'll be watching it, I'll be viewing it, and as of right now, you know, with the final 2 weeks beginning, it just leaves us in a very interesting spot. So as of right now, there are 9 confirmed matches, 7 of them we don't know which night they'll take place on. Let me give my thoughts currently on where I think the current state of WrestleMania is at. First off, let's go over the big boys. Night one main event. Roman Reigns, CM Punk, Seth Rollins. I think everyone is just, they've been really emphasizing this on every episode of Raw and SmackDown. You see one of these three, even Paul Heyman as well, you see one of those four guys involved in this feud. And I think it's more so who needs the win more. You know, CM Punk, it's all about this is his big opportunity to finally get a main event of WrestleMania. And as for Seth Rollins, you know, he's talking about how CM Punk doesn't deserve this. CM Punk just hasn't earned this. And then you have Roman Reigns, who's like, I've main evented like 9 WrestleManias. I'm the big dog. I'm the top G. Actually, I think he has WrestleMania 31, 32, 33, 34, 37, 38, 39, and 40. I guess if you do 2 nights, he's main evented 9 WrestleManias, but I think he's main evented like 8. So this will be the 9th WrestleMania Roman Reigns has main evented. And I think nonetheless, this is going to be great storytelling, great callbacks. I think if it's for me, I'm rooting for CM Punk. You know, I think the big swerve here would be Seth Rollins. I think everyone either expects Roman Reigns to do what he always does and win, or you have CM Punk finally get his win. But if Seth Rollins wins, it'll be a big swerve, you could say, Swerve Strickland, AEW reference. And I'll just be curious how they continue to build it up over the next 2 weeks. Because over the next 2 weeks, you have 2 more Raws and 2 more SmackDowns. That's all the more buildup you can have for WrestleMania, which takes place on Saturday, April 19th. And Sunday, April 20th. So you have a lot more buildup to do for all of those. I'm curious to see what they do, but I think that's going to be pretty good. Cody Rhodes, John Cena. I think this one's going to hurt because, you know, unfortunately, I don't get to see John Cena or Cody Rhodes at Monday Night Raw. Really sucks. I really hate that. I'm hoping one of those two is on SmackDown because when we look at the buildup the last 2 years, you saw CM Punk and Roman Reigns on essentially every, not CM Punk, you saw Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns on every single episode of Raw and SmackDown. You saw The Rock on multiple episodes last year. And, you know, we've seen 3 promos with them. And really, like, I'm left with wanting more. You know, Cena's obviously a heel. Cena's obviously great on the mic, but he's been in the ring twice this year, Royal Rumble and Elimination Chamber, and his third time is going to be WrestleMania. I kind of get the heel aspect where it's the farewell tour and he's skipping dates. He's skipping locations, which is kind of funny. But I do think this feud needs something more because right now, like, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. Like, they don't really have to do much more and people will watch. But at the same time, it's like, I'm left wanting more and I shouldn't feel like that. So Cody Rhodes, John Cena, I'm rooting for John Cena. Hands down, I think John Cena winning is the right call. We'll see what they elect to go with. Getting into our other matches. So first off, singles match for the WWE Women's Championship. Tiffany Stratton from Prior Lake, Minnesota, your current champion, taking on the Royal Rumble winner, Charlotte Flair. And they had a very weird promo on Friday Night SmackDown. I don't even know how to describe it. But I'm just going to let you know, this match is in very interesting territory. As you've said, you have someone in Charlotte Flair who's clearly over. You know, everyone knows Charlotte Flair, but she's been away a year. All right, and Tiffany Stratton came in. She was the young gun. She came from NXT. She won Money in the Bank, and she cashed in, and she won, and she's been over. And she's a great champion. But the one issue I keep seeing people bring up for this is that Flair is the heel, and Tiffany Stratton is the babyface, and it should be the other way around, because you really need Tiffany Stratton to be the... They could both be heels for Odyssey, but she works so much better as a heel, and she was honestly schooling Charlotte Flair on the mic. Charlotte Flair was embarrassing herself. And with that, I mean, I think they might go with Charlotte Flair, but I'm rooting for Tiffany Stratton. I'm honestly probably going to pick Tiffany Stratton when we do our WrestleMania 41 official predictions next week, but... this one's just, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to do this on night one or night two. I'm thinking that they're not going to do two triple threat matches if they end up doing Io Sky and Bianca Belair and the Women's World Championship, which we'll actually talk about next, on night one. So I'm thinking this is actually probably going to be the night one Women's Championship match. For the night number two, Io Sky versus Bianca Belair is the current plan for the Women's World Championship, but I think they're going to insert Rhea Ripley. And I don't see them doing two triple threat matches on the same card, so obviously Monday Night Raw, I'm going to be figuring out in the next 24 hours if Rhea Ripley will be involved in this match. Adam Pearce is going to sort it out, as they say. And I think we can all presume she's going to be inserted. Now, as for who will win, Io Sky, Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley... It's honestly a toss-up. I think the swerve is Io Sky. I think the obvious is Bianca Belair. And I think Rhea Ripley is just a menacing force. I think this is very similar to Roman Reigns, CM Punk, and Seth Rollins. And especially last year, where you had Io Sky coming in as champion and dropping it to Bayley, you have a similar scenario when we're going to talk about Gunther and Jey Uso. You just have so many similarities from here and last year, and especially here in other matches. So if it's up to me, I'm thinking they go with Bianca Belair. But a big swerve would be Io Sky. The obvious is always Rhea Ripley because she's so over. But that match, they've been doing a decent build for it. They have been doing a lot of fights being broken up, a lot of title matches. I'm very curious to see what happens on Monday Night Raw. I'm curious to see if they officially insert Rhea Ripley, and then I can cheer from the crowd with my boy Tyler. On the similar note, our final major championship, you know, we have the four major championships in the WWE, you have your two men's and your two women's. Other half of our men's is the World Heavyweight Championship. Gunther, the reigning defending champion, he's held the belts in SummerSlam, taking on the shocking Royal Rumble winner in Jey Uso. And as for what will happen with this match, it's tough to say. Jey Uso and Gunther will be on Monday Night Raw. They have two more weeks to build up this feud. I think they've done a better job than they did when after first Jey Uso won the Royal Rumble. But at the same time, it's like Jey Uso, unfortunately, has a very fundamental style to how he does matches. He gets beats up. He jumps off the top rope. He gives super kicks. He gives spears, does cross bodies. They're going to need to shock us somehow with this match, and they need to do something with it to make it entertaining. This will obviously take place on night one. I doubt they're going to load up World Heavyweight Championship matches on night two, but I think you either do two things here. You do Jey Uso, won the Rumble, gets his moment at WrestleMania, and we create a WrestleMania moment, similar to how he won the Intercontinental Championship beating Braun Breaker. Or you truly have Gunther go out there and squash him. And obliterate him, and you truly have Gunther be this menacing force. Now, don't get me wrong. He's kind of already a menacing force. I think the real question is, where do we go from here for future matches with guys after WrestleMania? But I'm personally rooting for Gunther. I'm not even a hater of Jey Uso. Call me a hypocrite. I root for him when he's doing his thing. I love participating in the crowd. You know, he's fun. His whole entrance is everything. But having an entrance, having a great get-up and look, doesn't really correlate to in-ring ability. And Gunther is obviously the standard for in-ring ability. I know he's not doing Will Ospreay and Logan Paul jumping all over the ring, but nonetheless, he's still entertaining. So I'm going with Gunther to retain here, shockingly. I just don't know if we're going to change every single belt at WrestleMania. Then again, in the Triple H era, he does love creating moments, and then after WrestleMania, working it into storylines. Another match that is official, AJ Styles versus Logan Paul. Logan Paul is on this little run here of just facing legends at WrestleMania. His first ever match, he teams with The Miz and takes on Rey Mysterio. His next WrestleMania, he takes on Seth Rollins. His next WrestleMania, he takes on Randy Orton, Kevin Owens, and he beats them both. So for this one, AJ Styles, he's getting up there in age. He only has about 1 year, 2 year, max three left to be wrestling. Don't really know what they do with him. Would love to see him and John Cena run back some matches if John Cena wins the championship, which I believe he will. So I don't really think either of these guys winning or losing hurts. I just think we're going to hope for a good match. Because, I mean, last year, both of them didn't have bad matches, but they didn't have memorable matches. All right, they didn't have memorable matches last year, and I think that's what kind of hurts. Would love to see AJ Styles get a win, but with Logan Paul, he's a great heel. He really, really just love to boo him. So that's why I do think he has done a great job with, and that's why I could see them obviously giving him the win. We'll see for predictions, but as of right now, that does kind of scream a fill-in WrestleMania match. The 6-1, just such a filler, and it's bad. Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez defending their WWE Women's Tag Team Championship match, their belts against the winner of a gauntlet match coming up this upcoming Friday. Look, the Women's Tag Team division is really dead. I think they tried to put Liv Morgan in it to revitalize it, but Liv Morgan just works better going for the big belts. That's what she does best. She has the look. She has the in-ring ability. She shouldn't be mulling around in the women's tag team division, okay? So I don't know what's going to transpire with these two women, and whoever they take on, we'll have to see, but I don't know. It's such a filler match. It screams kind of maybe night two to kind of like be the second or third match to open the show just to kind of give you a filler, or maybe even be the follow-up to a legendary match. Like maybe this is the follow-up to Gunther and Jey Uso. Maybe this is the follow-up to, per se, Tiffany Stratton and Charlotte Flair. It just kind of, that's what kind of strikes me as. But we'll see who they take on. That's where it stands. The final official match that we have, this is the first ever regular non-title women's one-on-one match at WrestleMania. Jade Cargill versus Naomi. There's like no stipulation or anything, and it's been a great feud. I love it, and it works. It works. Jade Cargill and Naomi have shown you how to perfectly execute a feud as two women and have people care about it. And it's amazing. They're going to break so many boundaries. I think you have Jade Cargill as a heel, Jade Cargill as the face, Naomi as the heel. I would love to see Jade Cargill win because Jade Cargill screams big championship. Jade Cargill is not a mid-title contender. She's not a women's tag team contender. Ever since she's came here, it's been evident she needs the big one. I think that's why she should win this match. But then again, Naomi, she's been earning her stripes. People have counted her out. If she wins this match at WrestleMania, this is a big telltale that Triple H wants her pushed to the moon, which I'm excited to see. With that, those are 9 matches. Those are 9 matches. And usually they do 6 and 6. I could also see them doing 7 and 7. I don't know what's left, okay? You have the final belts you have left are obviously the Women's United States Championship. That is just not going to be in a match. If they actually do a match for that, it is just not going to go over. Now, you obviously have the Women's Intercontinental as well. I don't see that getting a match either. I just think there's not enough hype for that. And they have to understand if they're giving us a Women's Tag Team Championship match, there's no way we need a United States and Intercontinental. On the other side, you have, oh my gosh, I forgot to mention it, guys, the singles match for the WWE United States Championship, LA Knight versus Chica Fatu is official. How did I forget to do this? Wikipedia, this is what happens when I go out of circuit. But yes, LA Knight versus Chica Fatu at WrestleMania, that's a fantastic match. We're going to finally put the belt on Chica Fatu, unless for some reason they decide LA Knight is the guy, which they can never decide if they want him to be the guy or not be the guy. But Chica Fatu getting the belt is going to be so awesome. And the fact he's going to have a singles belt before Solo Sikoa, I love to see. And Jacob Fatu versus Solo Sikoa, that's a match that we've got to see happen later in the year. Now, back to what I was saying before, LA Knight, Jacob Fatu, that's going to be a great match. I can see that happening on night one, maybe? Because I think on night two, we're going to be getting an Intercontinental Championship Fatal 4-Way or maybe Ladder Match. Because you have Ludwig Kaiser, you have Penta, you have Braun Breaker, you have multiple characters in the Intercontinental Championship title picture. I'm curious to see who they like to go with for getting the belt and what match happens at WrestleMania, but I think we're getting multiple people in some regard. Fatal 4-Way, 6-Pack Challenge, Ladder Match, something exciting's happening at WrestleMania, and I'm excited for that. Also, you have both Raw and SmackDown Tag Team Championships, or I guess they're WWE and World Tag Team Championships, I should better say. And on my episode of Monday Night Raw, you're getting the New Day taking on the War Raiders. I think that's a perfect opportunity to have the New Day win the belts, and then maybe they defend them against two teams at WrestleMania. On the other side, for the World Tag Team Championships, you know, you pulled the trigger kind of early on having the Street Profits win, and they're great champions, but you have like 4 other tag teams in the mix. I think with those 3 belts, they always do this at WrestleMania, you're going to be getting multi-people tag team matches, and that's not bad at all, because when I look at the lineup, we have 7 of our confirmed 9 matches are 1v1s. If you want, just one-on-one matches. So I think having those 3 come in and you have multiple characters in play, or even, you know, just IC and the World Tag Team, multiple players in matches, I think it'll work out just fine. But with that, I don't know what much else you can add. You know, I don't know if Solo Sikoa has a feud right now. Karrion Kross is always pushing for a match. You know, Kevin Owens and Randy Orton is off, which is just such a bummer. So I think they're going to maybe try and find a replacement for Randy Orton. It'd be weird to not have a WrestleMania with Randy Orton. So in the next 2 weeks, you're going to be getting a maximum of 5 more matches added and a minimum of 3. That's what I can promise you, because they're doing minimum of 5 on each, and I'd even push the minimum up to 6. Maximum, I'm saying, is 7. But that's your current state of WrestleMania. I think it's in a very good place. I think there could, you could maybe use a bit more. You know, Cody Rhodes versus John Cena just doesn't feel as big as it should. Like, it's already big, but I feel like they need to build it up just a bit more. Hopefully we see them on the final Raw before WrestleMania, or even they throw them on SmackDown, but hey, we'll have to see what happens. We got a lot more stories at place. Obviously, the loss of Kevin Owens and Randy Orton hurts, but it all opens the door for more possibilities. And I even hear rumors that Randy Orton isn't, or Kevin Owens isn't actually hurt, and it's all a work. And you never know in professional wrestling. You really never know what's a work and what isn't a work. So I'm excited to see what transpires. But yeah, much more WWE content as we progress throughout the next 2 weeks, which is about 4 episodes of the podcast. With that, let's get into UFC Vegas 105, because there isn't much to say, and I won't try and drag it out. I'll be blunt with you. There were some good moments on here, but this is now, we've reached, once we get to UFC 314, it will have been a full month without a fight of the night. And on this card again, no fight of the night. No fight of the night whatsoever. And it was a very unfulfilling card. And when I do my rankings at the end of the year, you know, I'm going to say that it was just at the bottom. It was at the bottom, but it's not like it was, like, bad. It was almost just like it happened, and you were like, that's it? I need more. Almost how UFC 310 felt for me. We brought this up in December, how that the main event ending, you're like, that's it? Like, I don't feel fulfilled. I want something more. And that's how this card felt. But we go 6-5 on predictions. I was going for way too many underdogs in this one. Some did surprise me, but overall in the year, 94-50 plus 44. That's not too bad. That's not too bad. And if we get 6 correct at UFC 314, which I guarantee we're going to do. Let me just tell you, I'm guaranteeing we're getting at least 6 correct at UFC 314. Going to knock on wood so I don't jinx myself, but we're going to be plus 50 in the hundreds. Hundreds. We're doing amazing. But let's not delay. We kicked off the night. Women's strawweight action. Talita Alencar, Vanessa Demopoulos, and hey, Talita, the underdog. I knew she would win, and this was about as straightforward as it gets. Talita simply out-grappled her every single round. 4 of 5 on takedowns, 12 minutes and 38 seconds. And as I'm going to discuss out here, we have a recurring theme of a lot of grappling on this card. Talita, 45 significant strikes to 10 over Vanessa, 107 total strikes to 34, and you even had round 3 where Vanessa landed 0 significant strikes and was controlled for 4.5 minutes. Talita, man, I knew she had good jujitsu. I will say she only threw up 1 submission attempt. Would have liked to have seen a bit more. You know, I'm glad she did in round 1. She almost got her out of there in round 1, but other than that, Vanessa, 4 of 5, really couldn't defend anything, and it was pretty embarrassing. And at 36 years old, that's kind of her ceiling. That really is. This is now 2 straight losses, and the grappling has just looked abysmal in both of them. Now, I'm not going to completely get her out of there because I'm going to offer 1 more option, but if they cut her, I would not be surprised. However, it is what it is. As for Talita, you know, I actually do have someone maybe in mind for, I like to matchmake on the same card, but there's just a ton of unranked women's strawweights out there for both of these women. It was a boring fight. It was expected to be boring, and we picked the underdog, which I was happy about. Next up, this one I couldn't even count for predictions because I was just not paying attention. And Kenny and Chukwu, even after like I'd recorded, I wasn't even paying attention, pulled out of this fight. And Marvin Rudeh ended up taking the short notice. He must be from Kazakhstan or Kyrgyzstan or something. Yuron Satibaldiev making a short notice debut against Marvin Rudeh, making his UFC debut. He was 9-0. Came in, and he lost his first fight to Martin Boudet. And Martin Boudet, I didn't even realize, is 6-1 in the UFC. Where did he get 6 wins from? That doesn't even make sense, but good for Martin. I mean, I had him losing to Kenny Achuku, and now's a great rebound opportunity for him. As for Yuron, tough loss. He'll probably bring him back. There's tons of heavyweights for him to fight. You got your Muhammad Usmans. You got your Kenny Achukus, for goodness sakes. I think you should just run back Kennedy and Martin Boudet. You got Justin Taffa, Junior Taffa. You got a lot of options for Uran Satiev. But the one issue with this fight, and this is going to hurt Martin Boudet, the biggest moment of the fight was Uran almost knocking him out in round number three. And Uran just showed that he didn't have the experience of some guys in the UFC because he clipped Martin. Martin goes to fall down, grabs onto him. Uran holds him up, goes to like throw, like gets him in position to throw a knee, and just like doesn't throw the knee. And that lost him the fight. You know, after dropping rounds one and two, he wins round three. It always leaves a weird taste in your mouth. But Martin outstruck him significantly, 58 to 36. Neither man could land a takedown. Martin had about 5 minutes of clinch control time. Two fight win streak for him. Is what it is. I saw some people saying that Martin should either fight Mick Parkin, right back with Kenny and Chukwu. You also have someone like Talshawn Teixeira, who is rumored to be taking on Derek Lewis. Don't know if that's going to happen. Apparently, maybe the UFC Atlanta main event. But if Talshawn loses that, that'd be an option for you. So, Martin, you know, other fights for you, but not yet again another lackluster fight. To make matters worse, you know, this fight was better than the other two, but yet again, I missed the prediction going for the underdog as Victor Henry beats Pedro Falco, and I should have seen it coming. You know, Pedro coming in, didn't have the best performances against Victor Hugo, and this was the exact same fight as that Victor Hugo fight. It was almost kind of weird how similar it was, but great win for Victor. Victor Henry, 25-7 now, and first win since April of last year, so good stuff for him. He's 37, getting wins in the bantamweight division. Can't really hate on the guy. Can't really. Landed a knockdown in round number, was it one, I want to say? I think it was round number one. That one in that round. Round two, Pedro really came alive. And then round three, he was able to use his grappling to end it all out. But good stuff for Victor. Getting the win. There's legends out there. There's Douglas Silva de Andrade. I don't even know. There's tons of unranked bantamweights out there that he could take on. Someone he could take on that's still in the UFC. There's a lot of guys that have been dropping out this year. So, I don't know. But Victor Hugo gets a win. Pedro lost. I'm sure he'll be back. There's other options. Look, we're going to talk about Cortavius Romeos up later on the card. Cortavius versus Pedro. Loser gets cut. That's how it can work. This was just another fight. Kind of, it was more exciting. We saw some takedowns. We saw some striking. But yet again, it just, you got the vibe. It was going to decision, and it didn't. Victor Hugo is notorious for going to decisions, and he gets another one here. Following that, this one really sucked the life out of me, and it's actually why I tuned out for the one fight, which was good, which is usually how it is, but Loma Lokbunmi just, her and Estella Nunes. You know, Loma Lokbunmi, you know, four-fight winning streak. Good for her. Won every round on my scorecard for this fight, but just boring. 3-5 on takedowns. She lands. Actually, Estella Nunes outstruck her 36-32. Toll strikes in favor of Loma, 111-51. 4.5 minutes control time for her, 3:15 for Estella Nunes. And that was that. That was really that. You know, Loma Lokbunmi pretty much won every round, somewhere close. I would say round three is where she really closed it out. But for being on a four fight winning streak, for having some momentum in the women's strawweight division, I wouldn't really give her too much of an opportunity. I saw people saying Carolina Kowalski. I would even matchmake her with Talita Alencar on this card, but little to be desired from Loma Lokbunmi. As for Estella Nunes, I mean, you can't get much worse than her. 0-5 in the UFC. She now has a professional record of 6-6. Either she takes on Vanessa Dimopoulos in a sympathy fight, or they cut her, and I think they're going to cut her. So, boring fight here. Little to be desired. Loma Lokbunmi is maybe getting someone like Caroline Kowalski, like a veteran, or they matchmaker with someone like Talita Alencar. It is what it is. We're really hoping that Estella Nunes would maybe win, but she didn't. I picked Loma Lokbunmi, but I mean, I wasn't shocked at the results that took place. After that, we moved into the men's belt welterweight division. We had our first actually entertaining fight, and you know, I unfortunately tuned in after round one, and the fight was stopped at the end of round one. So, Ryze McKee, Skeletor, getting his first UFC win. Daniel Frunza, very sad I missed on that prediction. Very sad. I would have loved to have picked Ryze McKee because he was also an underdog, which would have been great. But Ryze drops Daniel three times in round one. Do have to give Daniel a lot of credit. Was never officially knocked out. Landed the same amount of significant strikes as him. Really fought his way back, but his eye was super busted. You know, Daniel, bring him back. We're bringing back Daniel Frunza. Dude, it's a tough go when you take on someone like Ryze McKee, who really was fighting for a lot here, because Ryze McKee was 0-4 in the UFC. two different stints, 0-2, and this was make or break. This was almost like a sympathy fight for him after the dud he put on against Gigi and Chukani last year. He did not disappoint at plus 175. Great stuff for Rise McKee, getting his 11th career knockout. And how about that? Keep it intact, his 100% finish rate. Honestly, a little feel-good win. I can't even lie, it was a little feel-good win. In terms of the welterweight division, I saw some people throwing out the names like Tim Means. I really like that potential fight. You know, you also have like your Randy Browns. If Randy Brown needs a pick-me-up win, you have lots of players in the men's welterweight division. Lots of unranked guys. Rasmus McKee is nowhere ready for someone who's ranked, but he's only 29. He'll be back. Same thing for Daniel Frunza. Don't get knocked out. I mean, knocked off. Like, you know, this is a tough loss for you, but it was a doctor stoppage. When doctors stop the fight after round number one, you know, it says a lot. So Rise McKee, back in the win column, gets one of the four performance bonuses. Daniel Frunza, you just keep hanging in there. You're a tough cookie. I can tell. After that, one of those where it's just, I go for the big underdog, and they don't hit it all. Deanna Barbosa makes quick work of Diana Belbita. It wasn't even shocking. I'm watching it going like, yeah, Diana Belbita is not pulling off the upset. Diana Barbosa was a -1105, I'm pretty sure, favorite in this one. Gets her, I believe, fourth career submission for Diana Barbosa, and is now 2-1 in the UFC. Good stuff for her. Also gets a performance bonus for getting a little arm triangle action. Deanna Belbita, just awful. Three straight losses, two straight round one submission losses. Cut her from the UFC. Actually, overall in the UFC, she is 2-6. So bye-bye to Deanna Belbita. You need to go. As for Diona, good win. Good win for you. And, you know, women's flyweight division, always looking for ladies that can really deal out damage. And if you're out here getting submissions, well, I'll throw you a bone, as they say. I don't know exactly who, you know. I always like to look at rankings for these, but Diana Barbosa, there's some unranked competition out there that you can take on. Now, are they coming to mind? No. I think her versus Molly McCann would have been interesting. That's never going to happen, but I'm sure there's someone. There's got to be someone. Who is Diana Barbosa lost to as of late? Carolyn Kowalski, she kind of fluctuates divisions. You know, who was Diana Barbosa actually faced before? Miranda Maverick? Oh, that would have been a great fight to do. Ernesta, Hanna, I don't know. Interesting enough because you got a finish, but yet again, it's still woman's fight. Which I'm not trying to be mean because we've seen legendary woman's fights on this card. Kind of some duds. And there's another dud here now. Great win for Diona. 50K performance bonus to you. Not going to win any awards in my book. And it's funny, I always love that, like, plus 500, plus 600 underdog is Diana Belbita. I had to give it an opportunity, and it just didn't work. But good win for Diana. I don't like your nickname, The Witch, but yeah, good submission abilities. With that, we got into the main card. And first off, how about the loss of Davy Grant and Daniel Santos? Ouch. Ouch, that would have been such a great fight. Such a shame. We lost that fight, and we lost Kenny and Chukwu. Just kind of a doozy in that department. And I'll tell you where the doozies continue. And that was the first main card fight. And you know it's bad when you dominantly win and everyone's calling for you to be cut. That's what this case of this fight was. Torrance Finney versus Robert Valentine. Torrance Finney, you know, if you'd watched him on Dana White's Contender Series, by the way, won on Dana White's Contender Series three times and even still was tough for Dana to give him an opportunity, you should have known his debut was going to be interesting. Now, coming in, he's the favorite. Robert Valentine, we knew how he could win this fight, and Torrance Finney did exactly what we expected. The only issue is he did it for the entire freaking fight. That's right. Torrance Finney, 8 of 17 on takedowns, 13 minutes and 16 seconds of control time. Oh my gosh. Just, oh my gosh, 4.5 round one, 424 round two, 420 in round three, just sucking the life out of everyone. By the way, he landed four significant strikes the whole fight. Robert Valentine landed 23. He landed zero in rounds one and three. He landed a total of seven strikes in round one, nine strikes in round number two, and one total strike in round number three. Torrance Finney showing off that you can truly grapple your way to victory in the UFC. Now, 11-0. He avoids the undefeated curse, but there was just a very bad scorecard. Tony Weeks, I understand that he didn't throw a single punch, but let's not act like Robert Valentine got ragdolled for three straight rounds. You know, Robert Valentine did land 65 total strikes in round number three. He was at least trying in round number three, but Tony Weeks throwing out a 30-27 scorecard was insane. Like, that's borderline that's borderline, you know, what do you want to call it? What am I trying to think of here? Like the mob, cohesion. There's almost like a bit of cohesion going on, bit of a scumminess, you know. What am I? I'm looking for a word here, guys, and it's avoiding me, and I'm sure you're thinking of it right now. What could it be? It's when you rig something. Rigging? I don't know. Oh, my gosh. The word is going to come to me eventually. But Torres Finney only landed 17 total strikes, level 5, 4 significant strikes. He only threw 8 significant strikes. Insane. You almost get a crazy split decision. But Judith Giacobbe, Jump and Cartlidge both knew this was all Torrance Finney. And Robert Valentine, runner-up on The Ultimate Fighter, has now lost 2 UFC fights. And I'd love to see the control time, because didn't he get finished in round number 2 last time out? Yeah, he got finished in round number 2. He was controlled for 4 minutes and 45 seconds, which means out of his, if I'm doing some quick math here, out of the 21 minutes and 49 seconds that he's had in the UFC, I think over 18 of them he's been controlled, which is just really bad. So I would not bring Robert Valentine back in the men's middleweight division. I mean, if you do, how about Gerald Meerschaert? We're going to bring him up in a minute. Or I don't even know, dude, like some really, really mediocre unranked middleweight. Whoever won on Davis Quintero series last season and needs a fight, Robert Valentine's here for you. Now, as for Torres Finney, I saw the name of the upset man who won last weekend, Ateba Gaudier, who truly made an impact. There's a beautiful fight right there. I really love that fight. Torres Finney would be a perfect opponent for someone like Bo Nickel to take on at this stage. By the way, Bo Nickel, they're trying to give a layup in UFC Des Moines against Rayner Day Ritter, and I honestly don't know if I'm going to pick him, because Rayner Day Ritter has looked really freaking good, but that's for another time. Torres Finney gets a win. We predicted, and it just sucked the life out of everyone. I mean, this dude just grappling. And I think we're putting not enough blame on Robert Valentine for being freaking controlled that long and not being able to fend him off. I think we're being a bit harsh on Torres Finney. But Torres, you will be back. You are not going to be cut, but you will be taking on a killer. You're going to be given the Bryce Mitchell treatment, as we're going to call it from now on. After that, my favorite pick of the whole night, hands down my favorite pick, Ode Osborne, not only winning, but knocking out Luis Garuli. Oh, so amazing. Ode, plus 190, gets his 5th career knockout, 10th career finish. Great work for the Jamaican sensation, who was in desperate need of this. Truly was in desperate need. And round 1 was rough. Round 1 was rough, you know. Gets outstruck, gets taken down on 1 of 3 takedown attempts, and Luis Garuli wins round 1. Luis Garuli wins round 1. You're kind of like, dang. Lewis coming into this one, 10-0, you know, he's going to remain undefeated. What a bummer. But then, round 2, he starts trading. And I only saw the finish on Twitter, and then I went and rewatched the fight. And when you watch the setup in round 1, you know, you keep seeing Lewis go super high with his kicks, and Ode had a much bigger reach. So when he went over to punch, you know, his punches were landing. And finally, there was kind of a high one that went to the body. Ode is able to read it, is able to kind of grab his foot, throw the punch, drops him down cold. And I was like, that's going to stop the fight. Lands a couple of follow-up punches, and the ref was like, you know what, I'm done. Ode Osborne, 50K performance bonus, saves his UFC career. Good job, Jason Herzog, stopping that matchup. Ode was on a 3-fight losing streak, and by the way, there's a ton of context with this. You know, his losses, Manel Cape, Asua Mabayev, Ronaldo Rodriguez, he's only really lost to good competition, and I was expecting him to win this. I truly, really was, and it's such a feel-good for Ode Osborne. Really happy for him. Now, it doesn't get easier from here. You know, you're taking on your Edgar Cherezes. You're taking on your Kevin Borjas. You're taking on your Loner Kavanaugh. You're taking on unranked flyweights that are legit and coming for the throne. You're taking on, who did Joshua Van? Was it Ray Tazura? You're taking on a lot of killers out there. So just be aware of that in the men's flyweight division. Good stuff for Ode Osborne. As for Lewis, I'll probably give him to someone coming off a Davis Quintero series. Maybe someone who just lost recently. Maybe Ronaldo Rodriguez. Ronaldo Rodriguez, Luis Garuli. Good bounce back fight for both those guys. But great work for Ode Osborne. He improves his professional record to 13-8 with 10 finishes. Good stuff. After that, Brad Tavares, Gerald Meerschaert. I mean, let me just tell you, if you're expecting these two legends of the game, these two late 30-year-olds to just distance strike the whole fight, yep, that's what you would have gotten. And Gerald Meerschaert, the underdog, who I think was everyone's favorite underdog pick, does not get it done. So Brad Tavares wins a 3-round decision where casually wins round 1, casually wins round 2. Gerald Meerschaert tries to win round 3, you know, tries to get the finish. Couldn't land a takedown to save his life. 0 of 8. 0 of 8 on takedowns, but did get 3.5 minutes of control time in round number 3. And yeah, that was that. Brad Tavares in the win column yet again for the first time since August of 2023. And I have seen on multiple Instagram pages out there, they want him to fight Shara Magomedov. Sure, freaking do it for all I care. I do not mind. For Gerald Meerschaar, back to the, what do you want to call it? There's a word I'm searching for. The words are just not coming to me on this episode. The gatekeeper role. He's going to be taking on a young, hungry up-and-comer in the men's middleweight division. Not Torres Finney. Let me tell you, not Torres Finney. I don't really know who. You know, Ateba Gaudier, who we brought up, that could be a fun option. I really want to see someone who's well-rounded, because with Gerald, you have to really get past the grappling that he offers. So, I don't know, but Brad, definitely going to get fed to someone. Gerald, definitely going to get fed to someone. A total of 81 significant strikes landed combined in this fight. Very, very boring, but nonetheless, it happened, and we still root for Gerald Meerschaar, even when he loses. After that, a fantastic fight. If this was going to win fight of the night, I would not have been mad, but he gets a performance bonus as Chang Ho Lee, also who self-proclaimed nicknamed him the Korean Khabib and the Korean Marab. The Korean Khabib should be his new nickname. He doesn't have a nickname right now. The Korean Khabib, Chang Ho Lee, is a beautiful nickname right there. I absolutely, or the Korean Eagle, Chang Ho Lee. That could be another fun one, but these two, man, young, hungry, really wanting to win here. I guess they're 30 and 31, so not that young, but Chang Ho Lee getting his fifth career knockout, a brutal TKO. I mean, 36 and even strikes to 6 landing in round number 2, a total of 116 total strikes to 14 in favor of Chang Ho Lee over Curtamus Romas. This was a 50-50 fight for me, and I'm so glad I went with Chang Ho Lee. And Chang Ho Lee, it's now a 5-fight win streak for him and 2-0 in the UFC. Fantastic work. Good one for him in this one. You know, a lot of reversals. You had a total of, I think, 4 reversals, 2 for each of them. It was really, really good. And Cortavius landed 2 of 3 takedowns, both of those reversed. Chang Ho landed 2 takedowns, both of those reversed. And out of the, you know, not too long time that this fight took place, you know, there was about 8 minutes of ground control time, and this was about a 9-minute fight. So, like I said, back and forth. And Chang Ho Lee, you know, it just took him a while, but until round 2, he was able to get on the back and just was laying into Cortavius. Cortavius did survive a very close call with a rear naked choke, but he was eating so many punches, and it was eventually getting to a point where I was like, Chris Tony's got to step in. And Chris was eventually like, okay, that's enough. And Cortavius wanted to complain, I could tell for a second, but even he was like, dude, this kid punches hard. So Chang Ho Lee, the Korean Khabib, getting it done. Very happy for him. And in the men's bantamweight division, lots of options, if you ask me. And what's Chang Ho's record right now? You know, he's thankfully not undefeated, so he's not going to be hit with a curse. For Curtavius Romas, real quick, 9-4. He went 1-1 in his contender series and is 0-2 in the UFC. It might be time for him to get cut. But like I said, we were bringing up bantamweights earlier on the card. Him versus Pedro Falco could be an option. I think Chang Ho against Victor Henry could be another option. You do. I love matchmaking on the same cards, but Chang Ho, 11-1, getting this first UFC finish. Great stuff for Chang Ho Lee. With that, we got into our co-main event, and this one hurt. You know, this one really hurt. I think a lot of people were kind of bummed out by this, but Pat Sabatini runs through Joe Anderson Brito and just grapples him to death. And if you saw, honestly, people are hating on Torres Finney. Let's not act like Pat Sabatini didn't grapple him for 13 minutes and 47 seconds, including an insane 4 minutes and 43 seconds in round number 1. You know, one submission attempt from Pat Sabatini in round 1, one submission attempt from Joe Anderson Brito in round 3, that's the whole fight. That's the whole fight. So even strikes 24-3. You know, that's crazy. Joe Anderson Brito's ceiling. I didn't even realize it. And he's falling into this Calvin Cater, Dominic Reyes scenario where he lost a bad decision to William Gomez. Close fight, but I think we all agree Joe Anderson Brito won. And now he's out here getting out grappled. Just awful. 4 of 5 on takedowns for Sabatini. Just, 135 total strikes to 27. He landed an outstanding 61-4 ratio in round number 3. Just mauled him. Just absolutely mauled him. So, good stuff for Pat Sabatini. You know, he's on 2-fight win streak now. good stuff for him. You know, I think people are throwing out the loser of Gene Silva and Bryce Mitchell, presumably Bryce Mitchell versus Pat Sabatini. There's a fight you do right there. I think that's a perfect fight you could do right there. Even Edson Barbosa and what's his name, Steve Garcia Jr., loser of that could be someone you do. I think there's the loser of Dan Ige and Sean Woodson. There's a lot of options out there for these two, but man, just boring. Just really boring. For Jairson Brito, 2-fight losing streak now, 17-5. I mean, it's not awful for him, but this was an awful loss. Awful loss for Jairson Brito. Of all the people I listed, I think we'd have him take on one of them. So we'll see what happens, but man, little to be desired right there. With that, we got into the main event. And don't get me wrong, guys, I was 5-5 heading into the main event, and I was like, frick. I got to predict this correctly or something bad's going to happen. And luckily, Leon Murphy did win, but it was just 5 rounds of, you know, where's the big punch? Where's the big moment? And it never came. It truly never came. Leon Murphy, don't get me wrong, 16-0-1 now. He's like 8-0 or 7-0 in the UFC. It's something amazing. But just another boring decision. People were raving about the Edson Barbosa fight. I didn't catch that, but I did catch him and Dan Ige go in the distance, and I caught him and Josh Emmett go in the distance, and little to be loved. 84 Sleeman strikes to 41. Lerone outstrikes him there. 117 total strikes to 44. Really outstruck him there. 4 of 11 on takedowns for Josh Emmett for only 3 minutes and 39 seconds. It might have helped him win round, I want to say, 2? Maybe round number, when he landed his other takedown, round 3? I don't know, but round 4 and 5 clearly went to Lerone Murphy. The judges' scorecards were all over the place. You had 49-46, 48-47, 48-47, all for Lerone Murphy, and striking was close in round 4 and round 1, but other than that, 13-2 significant ratio in favor of Murphy in round 2, 21-5 in round 3, and in my opinion, you give Josh Emmett round 1 and rounds 2-5 went to Lerone Murphy. That's how I scored it. Verdict scorecard had it 2-2 in round 5, which I agreed with. Like, I was agreed with every scorecard. Like, you could have said 50-45 Josh Emmett, I'd have been like, sure, that works. But Lerone Murphy gets a win, calls for a top 5 opponent. You know, I think even he was like, I'm not going to tell a shot off of this, but he'll be ranked number 8. Don't really know if they're going to give him the 7 bone over Arnold Allen. They might. Emmett will probably be bumped down to either 9 or 10. And I was seeing people being a bit mean to Josh Emmett, giving him really unranked contenders in the men's featherweight division. But I'm thinking the winner of Gene Silva. If Gene Silva gets past Bryce Mitchell, Gene Silva versus Josh Emmett is right there for the pickings. The winner of Dan Ige and Sean Woodson, the winner of Edson Barbosa and Steve Garcia Jr., all these pretty decently good fights in the men's featherweight division. I'd even throw Pat Sabatini's name up there, potentially, but he's going to be taking on someone in the bottom 15. I wouldn't go so harsh as to say, like, someone, I saw the name Haider Amil, and I was like, there's no way he's going that low. Haider Amil is some unranked contender right now, but I'm curious to see what happens with Josh Emmett, and I think even more curious for Lerone Murphy, because now Lerone's going to be ranked 8, maybe 7, and it's an interesting scenario at the top of the top 15. So first off, Ito Pira, rumored to be leaving, fighting for the next lightweight title shot. We'll see what happens. Number 1 ranked Volk take on number 3 ranked Diego Lopez this upcoming Saturday. Cannot wait to cover that. Max Holloway is ranked number 2. I think he's fighting a lightweight from now on. Moses Vravlov at number 4 is welcoming Aaron Pico from Bellator/PFL into the UFC. That's random. You got Yair Rodriguez taking on another guy from the same company in Patricio Pitbull. So that leaves Brian Ortega, Arnold Allen. I think Lerone and Arnold might be London boys. How about Lerone versus Brian Ortega? That's all you can really do right there. I saw other people saying Lerone versus the loser of Volk and Diego Lopez, but I hope everyone understands Volkanovski, if he loses to Lopez, is either going to 1, retire, or 2, take big-name fights in the men's lightweight division. That's what's going to happen there. So Lerone, his best hope would be if Diego Lopez loses, he takes on Diego. He would either then take on the winner of Moses Vravlov and Aaron Pico, maybe in Brian Ortega. I don't know. I do think there's a lot of fights, and there's not a set one. But I hate to say this, guys. When I look at my rankings for the year, if I can pull this up real quickly, I've been trying to keep up with my rankings of events throughout the year. I can't help but kind of think that this may be the worst event we've had so far this year, and as drastic as that may be, I just think it's the case we've been dealt. That's how I view it, the case we've been dealt for this card. But UFC Vegas 105, a lot of grappling. If we were to add up total time, this would be a fun stat. Actually, you know what? I was going to add up the stat for how much grappling time compared to actual match time there was, but I just do not have the patience to go through and do all that math, especially on a day off. That's how I'm going to do it. But, yeah, Vegas 105, it's in the past. If I could give you top five moments, your four finishes, and the fact that Yaron Murphy has proven he can hang with a top 10 guys. So that's exciting stuff. What's more exciting, without a doubt, is UFC 314. It's going to be fantastic. It's hands down the best pay-per-view of the year so far. It's such a fantastic main card. I could rave about for a while, but I'll save it all for our next episode. Also on that episode, I'll be talking about my Monday Night Raw experience. Maybe do some WWE stuff, discuss the NBA as their season will just about be winding to an end as well. A little bit of Final Four talk as the Final Four games already happened. I mean, I'll talk more about it, but obviously Duke got upset, Florida advanced, and we'll know the champion by the time we next record. But guys, I'm telling you, this upcoming weekend, you know, April 11th, 12th, 13th, big things are ahead. The month of April is here for the taking. I'm coming to take over. Who's ever listening should be coming to take over. We got fun stuff on the horizon. The future looks bright. Guys, you have a fantastic week. Live the best life you can possibly. And while you're at it, how about you come back and listen to the Surprise Jab podcast? And as always, I messed up my outro. I'm always trying out new outros, but guys, I'll catch you next time. Have a good one.